once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. That's the fastest I think I talk all week. It exhausts me. And it makes me want to be silent for a while. We could
talk.
Speak very slowly.
Slowly.
Mr. Rogers talked very slowly, and it was a very popular TV show.
Yeah, but he didn't have a fast-paced economic program. Boom!
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't think we do either, but hey, it was fun to say.
Well, there's a lot of economic good news at some level, and I'm a little suspicious of it because it came all at once, but that's all right.
There's also, we wanted to get deep into the SECURE Act.
Yeah,
so.
I do want to get deep into SECURE Act, but let's talk about some things for a second. Housing starts jumped 3.2% in November from October. Whoa, that's big, particularly for this time of year. In residential permits rose 1.4%. The industrial production in the United States increased a seasonally adjusted 1.1% in November. Now, you need to take that with a grain of salt because it includes the fact that General Motors started its factories back up again because the strike was over. Well, I know that was ancient history. There was a 40-day strike and all of that, but still. Employers in the United States created – now, these are empty jobs. These are – some of them are getting filled, but they created 235 job openings – but at the end of October, over the previous month, 235,000, job openings, which is a lot of job openings. Now, that's less than we were creating monthly.
A year ago,
but still, that's a lot of job openings. And it's pretty amazing. The Bureau of Economic Analysis came out then and said personal consumption expenditures, which is household spending, it's called PCE, by the way, rose 0.4%. Now, that's seasonally adjusted, too, in November from October. That puts it up 2.4% from a year ago. That sounds really good. The problem with all that good news is if you take it in context, it ain't quite as good as it looks. For example, a year ago, we were increasing PCE, that's the personal consumption expenditures, by 5% a year. Now we're increasing 2.4% in a year. The growth in personal consumption expenditures, even though it's an amazingly good number.
It's a less good number than
like
what it was.
Half the growth that we saw a year ago. In other words, growth is, we're still getting growth. We're still growing, but our growth rate is decelerating. And if you want to project that out sometime next year, it goes to zero. And despite this surge in industrial activity, I think that has a lot to do with the end of the General Motors strike, because it's not just General Motors that started producing again, but all the companies that produce parts that go to the General Motors factories so they can build the cars started cranking up again. All of these things together, I think, are false signals. And I'm really kind of I'm a little bit afraid of saying that because there's so much good basic economic news at the national level about what happened in November. Personal spending up, personal consumption up, industrial production up, imports are down. That's weird, by the way. Imports and exports went down while personal consumption went up. Something is disconnected here. We're not seeing anything uniform. We're seeing a lot of noise and a lot of turbulence in the system.
This is the same kind of zigzag pattern to the graphs that I was talking about when you're at the top of an industry's growth rate. So I brought this up a couple of weeks ago with the hiring rate and hiring and firing rates at truck driving firms and a number of tons used on the road at truck driving firms. And we had this very steady, smooth growth rate that was going up at astronomical rates for a very long time, peaked out, dropped hard, jumped back up, dropped hard again, jumped back up, dropped hard again. That zigzag effect at the top means that we're at capacity. That's as much as we can do, and you might get a lot of demand in a given month, but you're now at the top of the ability to meet that demand. So
we have another caller.
Falls off again. Yes, we have another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, it's Chris in Georgetown.
Good to hear from you, Chris.
good to hear from you. Long time no talk.
Yeah. How are you?
Good, good. I was going to ask you guys about just employment in general as to where it is in kind of a lot of labor sections or service sections, and just is the labor situation good, bad, or, you know, kind of where it's going? And in general, like, pay, like how people's pay compared to 10 years ago, or where the pay is going? Are people getting paid, you know, a certain amount, a good amount, or, you know, wages kind of lowering or something like that?
Okay. Good questions. You want to hang up and listen, or you want to stay on?
No, stay on. So I probably got to ask you a question.
Okay. It's funny. We're just looking into that. I was working on that last week because it's an area of, I saw some reports on it and started digging into it. What we're seeing is a very, very high, very, very low unemployment rate, a very high employment rate. But the fact that we've got a high employment rate must hide something. A lot of people, and it's hard to tell exactly how many because we don't track that, but there's pretty strong evidence that a lot of people left full manufacturing jobs where they were working 40-hour weeks plus overtime and getting high pay. They were unemployed for a while during the Great Recession and then for a while afterwards. And when they came back, many of them have gone into service jobs, and apparently many of those jobs are 30-hour jobs or thereabouts and are at significantly lower wages per hour. Now, that doesn't keep the statistic from being real that wages are up 3.1%. The problem is it's kind of like the S&P 500 and their earnings. The wages are up 3.1% because the people with high-tech skills and high management skills at the top of the chain are getting phenomenal wage increases, whereas the people at the bottom are just barely making it by. By the way, I think that's a big source of the polarization in the United States. The people who feel like the economy has left them behind.
Right. And there's
are Trump supporters.
Yeah. And that's why he's popular with the people that he's talking to, is that the amount of pay that they see coming in, they're not experiencing the big boom. And it's a real thing. And you know, having pay up across the nation doesn't address that there are some areas of the nation that really haven't had a pay up. They are still depressed.
There's a large movement to being a proprietor, either having a small business or being a sole proprietor in the United States. And when you look at the actual statistics on wage increases, proprietor income over the last couple of years is up like 1.9%, which is not roughly the same as inflation. In other words, proprietors are just barely making it in a booming economy, whereas the people who are working in the big corporations with high-tech skills or management skills that are in high demand are seeing these huge wage increases. And there is this great disparity in the United States. I said we had two economies with people seeing it very differently. And I think there's this great disparity in the United States between the people who are fundamentally being left behind in the economy and the gig economy, where people are working for Uber or whatever and barely making ends meet.
Right. So is the labor where your pay, where it's decreased, is it manufacturing or where
no.
is...
No, it's,
where is that pay low?
They're moving from manufacturing.
And it hasn't decreased. It just hasn't increased very quickly.
No, it has decreased in some cases, but it's not being picked up well in the statistics. The people who were working at one of those General Motors plants, it went from 20,000 employees to 4,000 employees. The 16,000 employees, where'd they go? And in many cases, they went to service jobs. They're waiters now. And they're working 30 hours a week. Well, I don't know if a waiter works 30 hours a week, but they're working fewer hours per week. And they're working at a lower wage. Now, they've got a job. They're fully employed. Matter of fact, some of them have two or three jobs, which makes me wonder about the unemployment rate. I wonder if they count that as three people employed. There's a problem in the economy right now, and it is not the first time we've ever encountered it. Every industrial revolution, we encounter the same thing, where there's a shift in what people do.
Right.
And the people who've always done well for years doing something that's high pay, and then they have to shift to something that's lower pay because their skill set is no longer needed.
Right. Well, a good example of the gig economy is when I work in the CPG industry, and I deal with distributors. And distributors will service companies like H-E-B, Albertsons, Central Market, and stuff like that. Well, one of my distributors went from their merchandisers who would go in there, make sure the product's stocked, the tags are on the shelf, make sure everything is good on the shelf, because the people at, like, the Albertsons, they're not doing it. These people are coming, the distributor team is coming in there and doing it. Well, now they just went to a gig economy. The distributor just now put them on another kind of like an Uber account. They go in there, and these people can go pick the stores they want to stock the product in. They can decide the hours they want and everything else. And the distributor essentially was like, we can't afford to pay you guys anymore. We can't have you as hourly pay, you know, pay because of everything else we have to pay for you. So they essentially
made them independent contractors.
Yeah, and good or bad, I mean, it's in my opinion, it's I understand it because of the cost of doing it and the very small margins that they have delivering the product to so you know accounts like Albertsons. But at the same time, the people in the gig economy, some people will do a really good job because they can make a lot of money. Well, they can make good money, but they're when it comes to that, you don't have the I need you to do this. In the gig economy, it's like, but I don't have to do that. Forget you. I'll go do something else. And it doesn't lead to very good, high-quality
right. Yeah, that's true.
Workers, in my opinion. It doesn't. And because I've worked for HEB, and I noticed that when you care about your job at that level, it does make a massive
sure.
difference on every level.
We're seeing that across the economy. For instance, Jake and I were talking about this on the way here. You order things from Amazon, and sometimes you get junk. Because
yeah.
Amazon really isn't selling it. It's somebody who is gigging on Amazon, who's picking stuff out of the garbage and selling you junk.
Right. And sometimes they're up and up and really good stuff, and sometimes they're not. And at some point, quality control becomes an issue.
But the people who
right.
do that are not employees of Amazon.
Right.
This gig economy, you know, California just passed a law that basically shuts down the gig economy. It says it gives a much more strict interpretation to what's an employee. And it's being fought in the courts. It's being fought all over the place. But this is one of those things. You know, when Murray said disillusion is, for lack of, or destruct, or what, there was news and other. Basically, things are coming apart. The European Union is coming apart. The corporate job security is coming apart. And this happens at times in history. It's happened before. It happened in the 1830s. It happened in the 1930s, and it's happening now.
Yeah, I think in my opinion, I think it's a bad idea for the state to come in there and do those things. I can understand certain laws of employment, but I think it doesn't allow for the economy to develop to where it needs to go, because somebody will figure out a way when this gig economy to form a company that will service that section and do a better job than Amazon will, because this is my opinion of Amazon since I work in the industry, is Amazon, when they bought Whole Foods, has turned Whole Foods into what it's not anymore, which was the hippie guy knew everything there was to know about vitamins, to know about kombucha, whatever else it is. Amazon has turned it into a big corporation where these people don't want that job. These people want to know everything there is about their product they service. They don't care too much about the cost. I'm not saying that they don't want to make a living, but that's the corporate world is not theirs. Amazon has turned that into it and has turned Whole Foods into not so much a, hey, I need to find out and go find the best food, organic, natural product there is in the world. Whole Foods is that place for me to go. Those people know what they're doing. It's not that way anymore. And Amazon is harder to deal with. Whole Foods is harder to deal with now than Walmart. Walmart is easier to deal with in the natural food space
yep.
than Whole Foods is.
And you know that's a strategy of Walmart to beat Amazon.
Yes.
The supercenter, they basically want to have a higher quality and a regulated quality in their supercenter,
yep.
and they're not allowing people to just randomly sell on their website.
Yeah, and they have the logistics better than Amazon does when it comes to getting food in there, and the cost of servicing food in general for them is less than Amazon because they knew refrigerated, frozen, all those things, where Amazon doesn't know those things. And so Walmart is picking up these natural, small brands, putting them into Walmart and, you know, giving Bubba a natural, organic product. And now, I'm not saying they're going to beat Whole Foods, but they are getting really, really good at what Amazon does. And in my opinion, I think they will, I don't know if I'll ask them, but they will still be strong for, you know, 20, 30 years from now.
You got a good point there. We were talking about that on the way in today.
Yeah, I agree. And quality control is going to be something that comes after. There's a lot of other people doing the same thing.
Were you listening to my iPhone on the way in?
Yeah.
I had this
conversation last night at a get-together about someone's uncle, or yesterday at a get-together, about someone's uncle saying to her, "I got these pants on that Amazon. It came right to my door." And right now, that is the prevailing opinion of Amazon. And it's kind of like where Facebook was in its first 5 years of existence. So this is a great place you can hang out and get together and talk about all the things you wish to talk about. And now Facebook is a political wasteland of warfare and violence across the political divide. There's occasionally a baby picture too, but it's almost like, protect that baby. Don't put it in the middle of the political debate.
You know, that reminds me of? I think Amazon may have just collected its last new customer. you remember back in 1999 or two? Yeah, it was early 2000. Your mother and I were on vacation down in Fredericksburg.
I remember this.
Heard this rancher and his family next door saying, one table over saying, "I'm going to get me some of that Dale stock. It just split, and every time it splits, it goes up. It's kind of like a cow having a calf. It's worth more when it splits."
And that is about the opposite of the true meaning. It should be 50%, 50% for a 2-for-1. It's still the same stuff. And you didn't make it any different. You just got splitting of them.
And I looked over at Vicky and said, "I think we just had the last entry into the bull market," and it was so prescient that I said that, because the market started down. It was on a weekend, and literally on Monday, the market started down.
Yeah, and what we know about market share for Amazon is that they have really thoroughly saturated their market share. If you're going to buy from them, you're probably already doing it. And what that means is that it's going to be harder for them to find new customers, so now they just have to give you more options to buy, and that's why they're expanding into Whole Foods and things. They're saying, what else can we sell to the same people? That now you've got some real problems, and that shipping food to doors is a lot more difficult than shipping pants to doors.
Actually,
well, that's because they never used a logistics, so they have to use, before they were always using UPS, Postal Service, FedEx, and everything else, and it was all dry goods. It didn't matter. But now food is a much more difficult thing to ship, you know, especially if you want
to ship
apples,
safely.
Bananas.
You have to put that word safely in there.
I don't know if you can do same day delivery. That's basically what we do when we go to the grocery store.
It's just as easy to ship. It's just if you want to be able to eat it on the other end, there's the problem there.
Right, and the CPG companies now are mapping the policy on Amazon, as they will go in and look for their product on Amazon to make sure that nobody is lowballing them on the
CPG SRP. is consumer packaged goods, for those of you not in the know there.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah, and they do that a lot of the customers I work with do that on a regular basis. And any distributor, they go to that distributor and say, "We notice this company is buying from you, and they're selling on Amazon or somewhere else. They can't sell it at this price. You have to stop selling it to them." So I think it's affecting Amazon. It is not allowing anybody to go in the market and sell it and lowball it. So, like you said, that's why Amazon went to the Whole Foods, so they can sell more product.
Right. Well, I heard somebody say the other day that Whole Foods, since it's been taken over by Amazon, is still Whole Foods. They just took the W off.
Well, they did. They did. And also, brands have to pay a 10% Amazon fee. So if you sell a product to Whole Foods, there's a 10% deduction that you have to account for Prime members. So there's a lot of people that go in there like, okay, not only do I have to give them a certain price off Whole Foods, but then I have to add 10% of that. So they're like, "You're killing my margins."
That's what we were talking about earlier. This one of the headlines is this is the worst Christmas season in memory for retailers because of discounts. They're having to do more discounts to sell the same products than they've ever had to do before.
Right. And what so this is what accounts or what customers or, you know, grocery stores are going to have to do is they're going to have to offer something different, which is a premier shopping experience. They're going to have to offer somebody, why do I want to come in there? Okay, well, I can get that anywhere, right?
Jugglers. Well, they need jugglers, and...
No, HEB has got it figured out. You just have a lot of food cooking in a lot of places and make people really, really hungry when they walk in, and then give them free food. Give them a little free food here and there and everywhere else, and they'll buy a whole lot of stuff because they get hungry. And HEB is doing a good job. And
this is why I shop late at night.
Because they're not cooking food in there?
They're not cooking food in there. They're not trying to change my behavior any more than what's on the aisles. I mean, the reason why they put the eggs and the milk at the far end of the store is because that's what you're there to get. You got to pass everything else.
So I have one dad joke for you.
All right.
Okay. Oh, a dad joke. Oh.
I might have to reciprocate.
What is orange and sounds like a parrot?
An orange parrot?
A carrot.
A carrot.
A carrot.
Ah! All right, I got one for you. And since we're doing colors, what's brown and sticky?
Oh, come on. That's a stick.
It's a stick. You knew that one. Oh, man.
That's a good dad joke.
Right? That's a good dad joke. A stick is brown and sticky.
Yeah. We're both dads.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend, gentlemen.
All right. Take care, Chris.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, but I'm a better dad than you are.
Because you're just greater?
No, I'm a granddad.
Yeah, you're a great. You are grand.
I'm not a great.
Great. Yet.
I'm not great. No, let's hope not. But the telephone number in here to call is 254-773-1400. This is the wealth coach. The personal wealth coach, not the impersonal wealth coach.
No.
A couple of other things that are worth mentioning. There's a lot of things going on out there that make the short-term things look really, really good. But it's good to keep your eye on the index of leading economic indicators and the fact that it did not make any headlines when it came out on the 18th. That says a lot by itself. The index of economic indicators was flat. The leading economic indicators was flat, and it's been down 0.2% for the last three or four months.
Three months. It's the fourth month in a row without growth.
And its 6 months average still remains negative. 0.0333 negative. Now, the leading economic indicators are not a guarantee that we're going to have a recession in the next 6 months to a year.
No.
But we've never had a recession when they weren't negative, and they are negative. And so basically we're running along with about a 50-50 probability that within the next 12 months we'll have a recession. And the consensus of just about every economic writer that I have encountered has gone from pessimistic a couple of months ago to pessimistic meaning at least a 50-50 chance of a recession in 2020.
Now saying, hey, we're good to go forever.
Everybody seems to have concluded in a very short period of time that it's Christmas and everything is going to be happy.
That makes us nervous.
And it's a wonderful life.
When everyone agrees about anything, we get nervous. Anything.
It's a good idea to remember that it's a wonderful life was written about the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Anyway, we probably need to do commercials because it's 30 minutes after the hour.
Yes, and we will be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join the conversation here, the local phone number is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. You know, one of these days I'm going to say, and Jeff McClure.
Yeah.
And you're not going to know how to say when I go. No lead in.
Are you going to start with me?
You could say Jake, and
I'm going
to
end with with.
Jeff.
You're going to say with instead of with Jeff and.
With and.
And I'll say. And you'll say, what's wrong, Jake? Can't say your name? And I'll be...
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number in here is 254-773-1400. If today is the last day of fall and or the first day of winter of 2019, and you'll just have to guess what day it is.
Right. The last day of fall may have fallen on the first day of winter. We're not sure. If it fell then it was still falling, which... tells you it was likely still fall.
Yeah, okay.
That made as much sense as any of the market prognostications.
We were going to talk about the Secure Act, so let's get to talking about the Secure Act. We've only got half an hour to talk about it.
Okay.
And we'd need to take more than half an hour to explain it. And we have a telephone call coming in on 254-773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Where?
This is Mark. I'm from Belton.
Hello,
hey,
Mark.
Let me ask a question. This economy we're talking about, based on what President Trump has done as to deregulating certain things, reducing regulations, changing the economy as we knew it in the last 8 years of President Obama, what can we attribute this weird juxtaposition with what you guys are telling us and what everybody else is telling us? Where does that come from and how do we account for that? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
very good question.
Good question.
If we had a really good answer for that, we'd probably get the Nobel Prize in thinking.
Right. So here's what kind of the base underlying answer to that is. There were a lot of regulations that were rolled back. Regulations are expensive for business. Lack of regulation can be expensive in other areas, healthcare, that sort of thing. So if we're thinking way, way, way back to the 1970s, Clean Air Act wound up being a net positive for overall profitability across the nation, but there were definitely significant areas of the economy that were hurt by it. So rolling back regulations, it's just like taxes. Cutting taxes doesn't always increase or decrease revenue. Cutting taxes may have no effect. It might increase revenue or raise revenue depending on where you are in the economy. So a lot of the regulations that were rolled back have made companies more profitable. That has to be underlined a couple of times. The issue with where we are, what we're saying with the growth, is at some point when you have just about everybody working and just about all of them working as many hours as they can work, it's really hard to work more, which slows down your growth rate. And that's what we're seeing, is that we have the thing we've been looking for. People are still explaining and complaining around it, but we are in a booming economy. The vast majority of people have jobs. Whether or not they have the job they want or not is a question, but the vast majority of people have jobs and have enough extra money that they're spending more this year than they were last year or the year before or the year before or the year before. Those are all good things. The thing is that if they're working as hard as they can, you can't work harder than that. That's what's limiting the growth rate. There's only